Hello and welcome to the latest exciting installment of the Bad Wolf podcast. Now, I've got a little disclaimer to put at the front of this. This is a re-upload from about 13 years ago where Pete and I were joined by Barry from Geek Syndicate talking about the first four Indiana Jones movies. And with a new Indiana Jones movie on the horizon, I thought this was the perfect time to repurpose this for SEO purposes. Okay, so there might be stuff we mentioned in this that is a bit outdated now because it's 13, 14 years old. Some actors might have passed away. Some actors might have faced consequences for previous behavior. And some actors might be doing just fine and starring in a new film. We didn't know at the time. Enjoy.
And joining me today is Bad Wolf regular Pete.
Hey, yeah.
And we have a special guest today. We are joined by the co-founder of Geek Syndicate and number one best-selling author, Barry Nugent.
Hello.
You guys all right?
Yeah, all good. I'm very excited. I always love the chance to talk a bit about the man in the hat. I haven't really sat and talked about him in quite a while, actually, because I did a podcast with another indie fan, which was probably about 6 years ago, and that's something like that. We did a sort of three part where we did it in sort of two parts and we sort of talked about all the films and stuff. And I think the fourth film hadn't been out for that long. So we sort of talked around that. And obviously that's the more controversial one, shall we say.
Yes.
but we'll get there. We'll get there.
Sure. We will. Yeah, we're going to cover all four films today in this one minute episode, I guess.
Awesome.
So I thought we'd start by just talking about how did you guys first get introduced to Indiana Jones and that sort of world and universe?
Oh, wow. Well, I think, 1981? What? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was 13. and they had these big colored glossy foldouts that said from the people that brought you Jaws and Star Wars, and it was this big deal, and it's like, oh my god, George Lucas helped make this, it's, wow, and it's gonna have Close Encounters in it or something. And yeah, it was really exciting. And but I don't think I've seen these. I was saying before, I don't think I've seen these films more than once or twice since they were in the theater. And it was I just took three of them in. I didn't do Temple of Doom, but I think I have seen Temple of Doom a few times. Because it's very sharp in my memory, unless you're going to correct me. But yeah, they're very, very beautiful. It was really fun to see them in new eyes because I've just seen the other three in the past 24 hours.
The thing I'm worried about is I've seen them all today, so they're all mixed up together in my mind.
Well, we'll fix that.
Proper. Yeah. So, Barry, how did you get indoctrinated into this world?
It was a weird story, actually. I've probably told it countless times now, but it's a weird story. I was having breakfast. I remember very vividly. I was having breakfast one morning, and back then, you didn't really get a lot of trailers and stuff on TV like we do nowadays. Sure. But you got a lot of movie trailers on the radio, and I remember I was having my breakfast, and there was a trailer for Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it came on the radio, and they did it in the style of like a cliffhanger serial, of kind of like, will Indy American escape from the snakes? Will this happen with it? And up until that point, I never knew what the term sort of pop adventure was or anything like that, but something just clicked when I listened to that trailer, and I suddenly had to see this film. And I was 11 at the time, and I remember my mum say to me, she wouldn't let me go unless my brother came with me because he was older.
Cool.
And I spent the next week hounding him, literally every day. I was one of them kids, like, can we go into Raiders? Can we go into Raiders? Every single day, until in the end, he just said, oh, for God's sake, okay, we'll go and see it. Mm-hmm. And in that week, he was there was also a clip of Harrison Ford in a really old UK film show called Clapperboard. And he was in this massive puffer jacket on the ship, which is in Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, the one which gets attacked by the submarine. Sort of.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And he's on there and he's sort of training with the whip and he's just got this big jacket on and he's just training with this whip. And I had no idea that he even had a whip in it or anything like that. And if I was excited before, that kind of took it to the next level. So obviously, my brother took me to see the film and I had no idea that Harrison Ford was the same Harrison Ford who played Han Solo.
Oh, cool.
I had no, and all that sort of, all the sort of blurb about, you know, from the directors of Klaus and Cannes, all of that went over my head. I mean, nowadays, you know, as
sure, sure.
an older person, you know, you take all this sort of stuff in and you look to see the director in. Back then, I couldn't care less, you know. So even after I saw the Raiders of the Lost Ark and someone said to me, it's Han Solo, we had this massive argument in school. Because when you actually look at him, I don't know what they've done with him. I think it's because he's got like a tan and the filter and whatever, but he looks really different.
He's a million miles away from what Han Solo looks.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got all the Harrison Ford mannerisms, but it is credit to the actor. It's a whole other character.
Yeah, definitely. And I, and you can tell from my mouth gushing, it just blew me away. You know, so many things happened to me. That's when I decided I was going to become a writer because I just wanted to kind of recapture that sort of feeling that I had when I left the cinema. And the only way I could kind of do it was to write something down, which is what my mum had sort of suggested to me to do. So I started writing stories and I kept writing. I'm still writing now, you know. It gave my love of pulp adventure. And I think that was my real sort of love affair with geekdom started really to a certain extent. And I think I probably wouldn't be sitting here now saying I do a podcast and all the rest of it if it hadn't been for that film, because I think so many things kind of, it was like a domino effect for me. You know,
it's a really big deal in terms of genre. I mean, it's, you know, it's like everybody says, ooh, this is so iconic. This is that, you know, that's so iconic. But you just sit in front of the things and, you know, it's like they come out of the gate saying, okay, we're doing pulp cereal. And, you know, and you're told that sort of coming on board. But it just also happens to be, you know, these top directors at the top of their game doing amazing things in amazing locations. It's good stuff.
Well, my first Indiana Jones film was actually The Last Crusade.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I was 7 when it came out on VHS.
Wow.
And every Sunday night, my mum and dad used to take me around to their friend's house, Jill and Dean, and they would get a new, whatever the latest film was out on the video. I think it was around the time like Blockbuster first opened over here.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd come back with it, and one day they just came back with this. And sort of sat down. It was around that time I was just getting to realize that adults had parents too. So I was really blown away by the fact that Indiana Jones had a dad.
Yeah.
Cool. So yeah, and since then I've just been a big fan of the whole franchise.
That's awesome.
I think Temple of Doom is probably the one I've seen the most.
Right. I think for me it's Raiders.
Yeah.
That's the one I've seen the most, and that's the one that I always say to people, something is silly because you've got a trilogy. Okay, obviously they did the full film. That's the one which feels the most standalone.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You're right.
It feels very different from the other two movies, and I know there was a lot of a backlash about Temple of Doom. There was a lot of kind of negative stuff about, you know, the way, you know, some of the culture was portrayed in that film and stuff like that. And it was a very dark film. I think with Last Crusade, they kind of went the other way. Cause effectively, it's a comedy film.
It is.
It's a comedy adventure. Yeah. And which is why some of my comments about the fourth film are in light of Last Crusade, because a lot of people were like, oh, it's too much comedy, you know, monkeys swinging about trees, all the rest of it. And my thing was, that's the way it was going.
Something I noticed about the fourth film, which I saw for the first time last night.
I saw it for the first time today, yeah.
Yeah. Is number one, somebody told me about the refrigerator long ago. you know, it's like, I think that's, I don't know whether it's a thing everybody talks about, but whoever it was that was talking to me at the time, they decided to just be completely not on board with the refrigerator thing. And let me know as much. And so I was looking at it, like, maybe it's good that I was warned, because number one, I thought that was at the climax of the film. So number one, that's good. It wasn't spoiled. So, I was fine with it. You know, it was like, okay, yes, he's probably would have been a pulp in there, but not running with it. There's
apparently Lucas actually went to Spielberg with scientific evidence suggesting that that could actually happen.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I don't know. I'd love to see a Mythbusters special.
Sometimes that's a tricky can only try one.
Also, I was a little bit concerned about the groundhogs, but then turn around, and suddenly we're looking at what was it in the other film coming out of the ground? There is that whole sort of, you know, little animals watching the action throughout the whole series.
Are there?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
In one film, there are the monkeys all over the place. I'm trying to remember what the other animals were in the first one, because the first film has got these little animals popping out of.
They do. Yeah, I noticed that as well. Actually.
Yeah, and it's only because I saw the first film minutes after the fourth.
Right.
That I'm like, oh, I see what they're doing.
So let's talk about Raiders. Barry, as the professional writer, what do you make about the overall plot and characterization?
It's just a masterclass. There's nothing else you can really say. I think, and a lot of it is the performances, you know, because I mean, you know, plot-wise, it's quite a straightforward plot.
Yeah.
You know, he's hunting the relic and stuff like that. But it's just the performances. And I think one of the things that I loved about Indiana Jones in that film was that, A, the opening was the fact that you didn't actually see him for most of the opening sequence.
Yeah.
You know, you get that great shot of him when he turns around and you just know this is a guy you do not mess about with. Then you get that sort of really great switch where after you have that kind of opening credit scene, whereas obviously, you know, there's films which haven't had action films which haven't had a good sequence as what we got in the first sort of 15 minutes. You know, 2-hour films which haven't been as good as that.
Totally.
You know, and this is the start of the film, you know, and effectively it was like you were watching another film and you'd come in like halfway through it.
That's what I just really appreciate, is you just get that top quality sort of piece, and the film hasn't even got going yet.
No. And then I think what's wonderful is you then flip it and he's back in university and he's a professor and whatever. And what I loved about that was I actually found that I liked him more when he was the professor than when he was actually Indiana Jones. I don't know why, but that scene where the two army intelligence guys come to see him and he's explaining about the Ark and, you know, all the sort of the Well of the Souls, and you see that kind of real joy in his face,
that doctorish glee.
Yeah, and there's a little shot of Denham Elliott, who plays Marcus Brody, and he's kind of looking at him with his sort of pride, and, you know, of like, you know, he's that good, you know. And I just thought he was amazing. And I think not a lot of credit gets given to Belloc, who's the villain.
What's the actor's name? I think Giggs.
Paul Freeman.
That's it,
Paul Farron.
Who was amazing, because what was great about him was he, you know, the speech he gives to Indy where he says, you know, I'm only a shadowy reflection of you. I only nudge to make you. I mean, he was.
He was right. He's absolutely right.
He's absolutely right. When you kind of watch him and you watch his actions in that film, he wasn't an out-and-out villain.
Yeah.
Get what? He basically was Indiana Jones. He was just working for a different set of people. You know, he wasn't interested in the Nazis. He wasn't interested in world domination. All he was interested in was getting the art, which is the same as Indy.
Every mustache-twirling moment he had, he held back from.
Yeah. And the sequence where Indy's got the the bazooka, and he's got it trained on the arc, and Belloc gives him the speech. It's brilliant. Even though Indy is kind of surrounded anyway, he'd already lowered the gun because Belloc had him, you know. And I just thought their dynamic was really good. And there was they didn't have a massive punch up halfway through. There wasn't they weren't physical enemies, you know. They worked like on a different level, and I thought it was wicked. You know, Marion Ravenwood, she was awesome.
I love that she wasn't just a shrieking violet. She wasn't a damsel in distress. Sorry, she got captured. But you get the feeling that if Indy hadn't turned up, she would have been all right.
Yeah. Yeah, she would have fought something.
Yeah, she almost drank Belloc under the table.
Yeah. But interestingly, when you watch certainly the first three films, because I never liked Willie Scott in Temple of Doom. She just did my head in.
Oh, she's so annoying.
But what you realise is when you watch a lot of the pulp adventure stuff back in the day, that what Lucas and Spielberg did, I thought was really clever. With each film, they used a different, like, female pulp, for want of a better word, stereotype.
Gotcha.
So the first film, you kind of had the sort of feisty, two-fisted heroine. The second film, you kind of had, you know, the sort of, well, screaming all the time. The damsel in distress, effectively, was what you got in the second film. And in the third film, you got the femme fatale.
So what about the fourth film? What did we get there?
Well, the fourth one was Marion again, wasn't it?
Yeah, Marion came back.
Yeah.
I think we should just pay a quick tribute to Terry Richards, who was the Arab swordsman in this. You may remember that when Indy's trying to find Marion through Cairo, he runs down that passageway and he runs into the guy with the sword who he just shoots. Well, Terry Richards played that Arab guy. He died last week.
Did he?
Yeah. At the age of 81, yeah.
Oh.
So, yeah, we'll just do a quick tribute to him. We'll raise our glasses. Cheers.
Cheers, mate.
Sorry to bring it down.
That's all right.
NBD, still a good scene.
Still a good scene. Very good scene. And it only happened because Harrison Ford had diarrhea.
Yeah.
He was meant to engage in a huge sword fight. but he couldn't get off the toilet for more than like 30 seconds. So he just said, "Hey, Steve, what if I just shoot this guy?"
Mostly.
Because on the Blu-ray, there's a couple of lead scenes where they've actually shot the fight. There's some sequences from the actual fight where they'd obviously done some filming before they decided to sort of, we can't do it anymore type thing. So yeah, you do see a little bit of it. One of the good things about Raiders of the Lost Ark, I think when you compare, I mean, you guys have seen the sort of today or whatever, so you'll probably be able to comment more. But I think one of the things about Raiders of the Lost Ark compared to Temple of Doom and definitely the fourth film, I'd say Last Crusade, actually, I would put in the same category as Raiders, is because so much of the stunts and stuff were actually real stunts. You know,
I see what you're getting at. It feels more real because there's a lot less CG.
Yeah, and I think because of that, much like, I know we're not talking about Star Wars, but much like the sort of Star Wars, it holds up after time.
Gotcha.
Oh yeah, it still holds up.
Whereas when you watch Temple of Doom, there's some scene in Temple of Doom where you just have to go, oh.
Yeah, I was wincing a lot today.
Yeah.
I think that was why I chose that one to not review.
Yeah, it hasn't aged well.
Because I'm sitting here thinking, wow, this is a strange thing. I was kind of fine with the fourth one. I really enjoyed it. I wasn't expecting to. I didn't have any expectations going into it, and it was the first of the three that I watched. And so, you know, I was just kind of happy to be watching Indiana Jones, and it was kind of giving me what I thought I needed out of it. I would love to hear the anti stuff because, I will probably become more picky as I review these again because they are really beautiful.
I think if we're still, are we still on Raiders?
Yeah, well, we can jump about. I'm assuming that anybody that's listening has seen these films.
Yeah, I just think, when we talk about cinema experiences. And I don't really go to cinema much anymore because to a certain extent, I don't get that same experience anymore. Maybe it's because I'm somewhat jaded, I don't know. But when, no, I don't think it's that. I think what it is, and it's something you said, Martin, because the way, I mean, you know, we have our own science, we're podcasters and all the rest of it. But I think because we're so inundated with information on a film or a game or whatever, you know, months, years before that product has come out, you've pretty much seen most of the film before you've even got in the cinema. And I think with...
It's almost impossible to abstain from that.
And I think with Raiders, I'd seen, as I said, I'd seen the 5 minute, well, not even 5 minute, 30 second sort of radio advert and a little bit of clip before I saw the film. And for me, I remember in the cinema, the sequence where he, you know, he rides out on the horse and stuff. The whole cinema kind of erupted into cheering along with all the... along with all the sort of workers on the screen all stood up when the horse was riding out, the whole cinema started cheering. People might applaud politely every so often, you all laugh along. Yeah. Just people just cheering and just getting caught up along it. And in a similar vein, when they opened the Ark of the Covenant, I remember the first time I saw it, a lot of it I didn't actually see because I had my hand over my eye. Because the build-up, they made such a big deal about the fact that you should not mess about with the Ark of the Covenant. That when they actually opened it, I was already shitting myself before the lights even started up.
Totally.
And when they all got killed and whatever, and then the lid landed, the whole cinema was silent. You know, and it's just an amazing... I've seen it a couple of times at the cinema since, but I would... kill for them to kind of re-release that in the cinema again.
I would love that.
You know,
in 2012 they did an IMAX, I read.
Yes, they did. I didn't get a chance to go and see that though. Yeah, they did. You're right.
Maybe we'll get it for some anniversary and they might do it.
Oh, it was
Prince Charles might do it.
It was the anniversary for Temple of Doom this year, wasn't it?
You're right. Yeah. Disney have just brought the rights for this franchise, mm-hmm. along with Star Wars. So do you think we're going to see an Indy 5 with Harrison Ford, or do you think we'll get a complete reboot?
I'll let P answer this for...
All right, I'm going to step out onto the ledge here. I don't think Ford's coming back. If he's coming back, he's coming back in a cameo in a chair.
Jumping ahead, a lot of the fourth film seemed to be set up for Mott Williams to have his own franchise.
Yeah.
And it's gone silent. Is that the horrifying thought of Shia LaBeouf fronting the Indiana Jones franchise?
Now, I can never remember who's dead anymore. Is he still alive?
Shia LaBeouf?
Yeah. Heath Ledger's dead,
yeah. Barry, if you were in charge of recasting Indiana Jones, who would you pick?
I suppose first off, I have to say, I'd rather they didn't recast Indiana Jones. But obviously, that's not the question.
No.
My pick, do you guys ever watch the Stargate TV series?
Which one? I haven't seen Atlantis.
The original one, SG-1.
Yes.
The guy who played Daniel Jackson.
Michael Shanks?
Yeah. He would be one choice.
He'd be good.
The reason why isn't so much of what he did in Stargate, and I know I slag off this show, but he was in Smallville for a little while. playing Hawkman, but he's kind of all ego with a sort of professor.
Right.
And there was a couple of episodes of him sort of out in Egypt or whatever, and that's when I kind of thought he could actually make quite good. Well, to be honest, at the time I thought if they did some sort of spin-off where, I don't know, Indy had a brother or something like that, or he was like a student of Indy or something like that, one of his students, I thought he would work really well. And that's what I mean. I just think rather than them rebooting it and going, well, we're going to have a whole new Indiana Jones and stuff like that, I would rather them either do it as a sort of spin-off. So as I said, like one of his students, I'm obviously giving this some thought, one of his students, or a bit like the young Indiana Jones TV series where you just say he's a young Indiana Jones. So, you know, it's almost set way before Raiders, if you get what I mean.
Yeah.
That could work. Or you just get Short Round as a old as a man.
Do you know what he does now?
What's he doing now?
He's a fight coordinator for films.
Really?
And he worked on the first X-Men movie. Yeah, basically, if you've got a film and you need somebody to show the actors how to fight, he's the guy you get in.
Oh, that's cool.
But yeah, I always thought, I never wrote it, but I even thought about doing some fan fiction of like Short Round, where he was kind of like in his sort of 30s or whatever, and he'd sort of gone on, India sort of sponsored him to sort of take up, study archaeology and stuff like that.
He'd have a whole different set of skills too, which we could see for the first time.
Yeah, definitely.
I'd love to know what happened to him.
I know.
Because that's my one complaint, is that he's never referenced again.
Yeah.
It's like, well, Indiana Jones. Sorry, mate.
No, I really enjoy when they take something that maybe didn't work as well as it should have, like, you know, Colin Baker's era, and do nice things with the performers. So taking stuff out of Temple of Doom and actually, you know, giving us something really nice that just has its roots there.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Or even an audio drama sort of spin-off or something like that would be good.
Yeah.
Big finish if you're listening.
Yeah. I think, I kind of agree with you, actually. I think given that Short Round was such a big part of that film, and his relationship to Indy was such a big part of that film. And they usually don't do kids in movies. They're usually kind of a little bit annoying. But Short Round never was in that film. You kind of get to Last Crusade, and it's, as you say, it's not mentioned again.
Well, I only found out today that Temple of Doom is actually a prequel to Raiders.
Did you know?
I didn't know. All these years I've been watching them, and I just figured Temple of Doom came afterwards.
Yeah. It's when you kind of, when you watch it with that mindset, that it works and it doesn't work. On one hand, it works because Indy is a slightly more mercenary character.
Yeah.
In some ways, until we get to the end part of it. In a lot of ways, that's his journey in it. He's still quite a mercenary character. You know, he's after the artifacts because he wants a prize, something to go in the museum. You know, it's fortune and glory. That's the whole kind of part. And then obviously we get to the end and he's learned something from it. But we then get to Raiders of the Lost Ark and he's kind of still a mercenary character.
Yeah.
You know, getting trinkets and, you know, and all the rest of it. And it's all about getting you out because he wants the prize and all the, you know, the fact that the Nazis won it, when you really think about it, it's kind of surplus to requirements to him. You know, he doesn't really make any big speech about wanting to stop the Nazis. He just wants to get the Ark and to beat Belloc. That's kind of really where he's at.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, so in a lot of ways, the only time it kind of comes full circle is when his dad has a go at him in The Last Crusade. He's basically saying to him, it's not about getting the Holy Grail, it's not about pride. It's about if the Nazis get it, we're all screwed.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Indy's got a lot of good motivations, but he's not really about the big picture like his dad was.
Nah. And in a lot of ways, he was kind of, I wouldn't even want to say anti-hero, because that's the wrong way to put it, because he was a hero, and he's, you know, there's a lot of stuff that went on in Temple of Doom as well that he just went, I'm not having it. So he is a hero, but he's just that slightly darker hero. He's not an anti-hero, but he's just got that slight edge to him, you know, which is what I love about him. It's one of the things
it's that sort of edge of bloody mindedness.
Yeah,
You know, it's like, especially, I'm thinking of the truck scene in Raiders. Oh,
that is fantastic.
Yeah, that was just a joy to behold again.
So, Barry, you touched on this earlier when you mentioned the Indiana Jones TV series. I fleetingly watched it. I might call an episode here or there. Was it actually any good?
For me, a lot of people liked it. For me, it didn't work. For me, there were episodes that I did like. There was some real corking in there. In fact, some of the ones I really liked actually had Paul Freeman in there, who was Belloc.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
He wasn't playing Belloc. He was playing a different character. So that was a little bit bizarre. And they were kind of this old army unit, because a lot of young Indiana Jones stuff was set during the war. And he'd kind of teamed up with this kind of sort of army unit of these old guys and stuff. One of them was Paul Freeman. And it's kind of from him that he gets that line, you know, making up as you go. And he gets that idea of, you know, just kind of just roll with it, you know. So some of that stuff was nice. But my problem was that it didn't feel like Indiana Jones to me.
How do you sort of put that on a shelf with the River Phoenix sequence?
Well, you see, the River Phoenix sequence worked. But I think it worked as well because it was just a sequence. You know, and it was there for a specific purpose. It was there to get you to the point of introducing Indiana Jones and to say, this is how he got his whip. This is how he got his hat. You know, this is why he's scared of snakes. This is how he got the scar. And some people have said to me they don't like that stuff because they quite like the fact that you didn't know.
Yeah, it gets tricky when the mythology starts getting filled in.
Yeah, yeah. And I kind of, I go back and forth. There's times when I love his look. You know, I love the Indiana Jones look, in inverted commas. I love.
He's exhibiting the Harrison Ford kind of expressions on at least a few occasions.
Yeah. I think River Phoenix is like impression. I mean, you believe that he was a young, young Harrison
Ford. Yeah, totally.
He was done. He did it so well. But I mean, kind of going back to the Raiders, what I loved about, well, actually, no, all of them, what I loved is this duality between Indiana Jones and Professor, you know, or Dr. Henry Jones or whatever, Professor Henry Jones.
Right.
With that, it was an almost Clark Kent Superman vibe that you got from, especially in Raiders.
He does have two outfits, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He does. You even see that in Temple of Doom when the, in India, and he goes to the palace.
Yeah, and he's got the bow tie and whatever. But
yeah, yeah.
You know, in Raiders, he's almost ever so slightly bumbling, ever so slightly. You know, he's carrying loads of documents. You know, there's loads of girls looking at him. He doesn't quite know how to deal with it. You know,
well, what's nice is he falls off stuff in Raiders even, which is nice because I saw Crystal Skull first, and I'm seeing him falling off of stuff. I'm like, oh no, is it going to be like this the whole time? Is it going to be like Harrison Ford's old, so we'll have him fall off stuff? But then you go back and watch the other ones, he's always falling off stuff.
Well, he's always, I mean, I think what I loved about him as well was the brilliant scene in Raiders when they're on the ship and he's with Marion, and you suddenly realize, you know, this guy's been getting a kicking for the last hour and a half.
Yeah, that was totally.
You know. Yeah, I love the way he moved.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite Harrison Ford scenes. It's like Blade Runner when he's washing his mouth out.
Mm.
It's like, you know, it's the part of the action film you don't usually see.
Yeah, but it's like after like you say, he spends most of that film on adrenaline. It's like the best example is truck sequence, because you have this amazing set piece where he's been on the horse, he's jumped onto a truck, he got rid of all these Nazis, he's been thrown out of the truck, gone under the truck, he's back in the truck, he's now back in the stroll. He then gets away from the Nazis, and literally just as he gets away from him, he suddenly realizes, oh shit, I've been shot. You know, oh crap, I'm in loads of pain. And you see him wincing, and then he's kind of, oh, because he's not had the time to deal with all of that beforehand because so much has been going on.
You know, I assume it's a power of adrenaline.
Yeah, and it's just those little moments that make him quite a kind of a human hero. And I suppose after coming off the back of watching a lot of the Bond films when I was growing up, where, like, you know, he could fight 20 guys and not, you know, still his tuxedo would still be like neatly pressed. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Seeing a character like Indiana Jones who just looked like crap for most of that movie.
Yeah, and also it's a sort of era as well. It's just so much more gritty, you know. And it's nice because the camera loves that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And the way it's shot, the lens, it's got this kind of muted sort of desert color to like all of those films. I'm sure some cinematographer could put it into words, but they've just got this kind of look to them, which I think is the slight, again, you know. I haven't actually said what I thought of the fourth film because I'm saving it. But
we all are.
But I think with the fourth film, you lose that because they put so much polish on it and they put so much CGI on it that you lose that lived-in quality that definitely Raiders and The Last Crusade had.
Yeah, maybe because I've just seen so much CG since the time that film came out. It was less jarring for me.
Right.
But you're absolutely right. I mean, just thinking back, that's a very non-indie moment, the climax of that film.
Mm.
You know, although the bit with the water at the end, I really liked.
Which one did
where the water is flowing in at the end of it all. And, you know, they're sitting on the mountain and things. I don't know if I can spoil it or not, or was it spoiled when they made it? I don't know.
Yeah,
definitely.
I think by now the statute of limitations is passed.
Because the flying saucer lifts off, and all the rocks spin around it. Now, that was troubling me, because I'm thinking, okay, I really have to believe in the magic fields around this saucer to believe that it's not pulverizing these people. But having done that, I thought it was really rewarding afterwards when the oceans come flooding into the hole that was left behind. It's worth seeing again because, you know, I really bought that because it's supposed to be this big city. And I'm like, you know, how is this going to be lost forever again, like everything else? And I wasn't disappointed. I really enjoyed that bit when we're in it looked really nice. But yeah, it was a very CG sequence at the end there. I could see how it's much different than the films that came before it. But also, I thought his pal Ox, that was just the right kind of creepy, I think. You know, the whole sort of messed with the head type stuff. I think the thing that sold it for me is like in the same way that when I was watching the truck sequence in Raiders, mm-hmm. I was thinking to myself, it made me remember it was Spielberg, wasn't it? Duel, the truck.
Yeah.
And I'm like, of course, this is a man who's made Duel. He can do this. And then you know, we're looking at Crystal Skull, and it's Spielberg trying to come home, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, he's dropped Close Encounters into Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It was actually Lucas who insisted on all the alien stuff.
How interesting.
And Spielberg at the end just went, yeah, just let him have his aliens.
Because I was reading something about Raiders where it was actually Lucas nixing some sci-fi elements, but I think Star Wars had been too recent at that point.
Yeah, probably.
It's something else I pulled off the interwebs. Apparently there's a sequence in Big Bang Theory.
Yes.
Where it's, yeah, well, you do it. Go on.
Funny enough, it's the only, because I don't like...
You have to put the theory out first.
Yeah, so in an episode, in one bit in Big Bang Theory, which is probably one of the three only scenes I've seen in that show.
Yeah.
The theory is put forward, I'm trying to see if I get this right now, where effectively the entire plot, Indiana Jones is completely irrelevant to the plot of Raiders of the Lost Ark, and that if you were in that film, the events of that film would have still played out exactly the same way.
Yeah, he made no difference to what ended up happening. But the point is, the joy is actually watching him fail repeatedly.
I think that's one of the key things about his character that I loved, or one of the key things about those films, was that he never got anything he went after.
No.
No.
And he never did make it to Delhi.
No. In fact, the one thing he did get was the Cross of Coronado in Last Crusade.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But the main, what they call the MacGuffin, the main sort of prize, he never got, you know. And I thought that was brilliant. I really loved that idea.
It's not all about the big win. It really is just the conflict, the drama, the characters.
The journey, really.
Yeah. I mean, they try to have, like, there's the moment where Sean Connery says enlightenment, you know, or no, illumination, he says he got. That was really what he got from the experience. But really, you know, I mean, that's kind of it, really. There's nothing tangible.
Yeah.
What I did love about the fourth film is in the third one, Sean Connery kept saying, this is intolerable. And there's one moment in the fourth one where Indiana says, this is intolerable. And I thought that was such a great moment.
I should have picked that up as a catchphrase. I didn't catch the repetition. I must have been too wrapped up in it. So in a while.
It's interesting that Sean Connery was only 12 years older than Harrison Ford when they shot Last Crusade.
Wow.
But they pulled it, off. Totally bought that he was his dad.
Yeah.
So, and he was only 58 at the time as well.
Who was Sean Connery?
Yeah, and he was playing 75.
Wow.
Stuff.
It could have gone horribly wrong.
Oh, yeah, it could have.
You know, the idea of giving in your dad and all the rest of it just could have gone horribly wrong. And I think it walked a fine line between, and this is just my own opinion, because I love Raiders so much. I love the tone of Raiders so much. It walked a fine line between being too comedic for me.
I remember feeling that when I first saw it.
Yeah. And I remember thinking to myself, if they do another one of these, it's going to keep going down the comedic route.
Crystal Skull was an interesting balance.
It was, but I think
I'm jumping ahead now.
No, I think it was on that same sort of comedic vibe. We never went back to that tone of Raiders. Which I don't think you could really. I don't know if you could have done. But it still worked. I mean, I loved The Last Crusade, and I still think that was one of the best endings for a trilogy.
Lovely sunset.
Yeah, I love that. I remember asking my dad at the time, is there going to be an Indy 4? And he said, no, it's called The Last Crusade. It's definitely the last one.
Yeah. That was the whole point. It was set up that way. I mean, you know, it's just beautiful. And to find out, you know, you find out how he got the name Indiana. You know, how he got the name Indiana. I think the sequence where he's kind of dangling and Sean Connery kind of grabs him.
Right.
I think that little sequence there typifies that whole trilogy for me. The moment when he calls him Indiana, and the whole film he's called him Junior.
Yeah.
And he just called him Indiana. It's just, it's just beautiful. Do you know what I mean? And it's that whole thing about it, not about the prize. That's the whole thing, the whole lesson from those films, not about the prize. Yeah. You know, brilliant. So I was in two minds when they announced they were going to do a fourth one. I just thought, why? Yeah, I just thought, why? You had pretty much perfect trilogy.
I think I was clearly too busy to see it because I never saw it in the theater.
I didn't either. I think because by the time I would have got around to see it, Actually, no, yeah, I just had a child then. It came out the year my son was born. So I was a bit busy, and all the reviews have been dreadful. Barry, I think you had told me that you didn't like it.
Did I?
Yeah, I think so.
No, nah, it can't have been me.
It might have been somebody else.
Because, well, look, should we talk about it now?
Cause let's get out of the way, yeah.
Let's get out of the way. So you guys watched it today, and the sense that I'm getting from you guys is that you actually enjoyed it. Would I be right or wrong?
Do you want to go first?
There were elements I enjoyed. I liked seeing an older indie. I liked his relationship with Mac at the beginning. And I thought maybe we're going to get this huge, like, great older adventurer type story dynamic. And then it just quickly descends into a bit of a mess.
It's very much a theme park ride. I think a lot of the kind of trip, like the scene that I always remember the first film is Belak and the sort of ceiling fans above him and that sort of, you know, vibe of kind of distant exotic places but the fact that there are loads of sort of lower moments where you do get some character tension. And in this one, the character tension is, let's surprisingly roll your ex-girlfriend out. And, you know, it's like, and it's you know, it's just blackmail, you know? And it's, whereas, you know, what the thing means to these people isn't quite, you know, it's really, here's Area 51. It's a little more, you know, we're expected to sink emotion into what these things represent, you know? And I'm really going on the ante here because I think because it would be, you know, because I didn't have any expectation of it, you know, I just rode along with it and I was fine with it. But it does paint with really broad strokes versus, again, even in the third film, you know, you get that moment where the tank's gone over the cliff and he thinks he's lost his son, and that actually ends quite amusingly. In this one, it's a little bit tricky because, you know, it's like it throws him a snake to pull out of the, dry sand?
Yeah.
Yeah, dry sand.
So, but the three waterfalls was what got me, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I could buy them surviving a waterfall. You know, there are so many things in indie where you're like, okay, I will buy the fact that he has survived this without being pulped. And then everything quiets down and we get a good character scene, you know, we get some nice exposition, you know, a little bit of tension, you know, before they try to sell us another one of those. But it's just one after the other, quite literally, in the fourth one. So that, yeah, that's I totally see where it has failed. But I think there's that main feeling where like you were saying, the three are kind of a perfect set.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, oh, here's one more. You know, it's diamonds are forever, isn't it?
You see, overall, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And I've put off watching it for 6 years because everybody's going, oh, it'd ruin your childhood memories. I actually know a guy who threw out his trilogy box set after he saw this.
That's
because he was that incensed. And like you, Barry, this guy's a massive Indiana fan.
Now, what was the word root of fan? That's a very fanatical thing to do.
Well, exactly. Barry, did you have any feelings of that when you saw this movie?
Right, okay. As I'm sure I've probably established by now, I'm quite a large Indiana Jones fan. And when I went to see this film, me and Dave went to see it. So effectively, I went with my best friend to see it. And I was properly excited. And when we went to the cinema, they were playing they just played the soundtrack from all three films whilst we were waiting.
Oh, fantastic.
You know, so I was pumped before the film even started. And I would say I went in with I don't know if I went in with high expectations. I don't know if I did or not. But my main worry was that the hero that I grew up with was going to be too old and they were going to make a joke out of him. That was my worry.
Right.
And the one thing that I took away from this film, I would argue with anyone, the one thing I took away from the film was that actually Indiana Jones is all right.
Nah.
You know, there's a lot of other things you could say about that film, but Indiana Jones was all right. He was still...
Yeah, he was fine, yeah.
And yeah, he was still dropping the line that he was.
Just yeah, they didn't hurt the character.
They didn't hurt the character. Yeah. You know, the plot might have been all over the place in a lot of ways, but they didn't hurt that character for me. And I thought the first... I kind of agree with you, Martin, actually. I thought the opening sequence of Area 52, I thought was really good. Because it kind of had the action, there was a little bit of humor in there. I kind of liked the dynamic between him and Mac. I thought they completely lost the Mac character as the film went on. I thought the dynamic they had at the beginning was wicked. And I thought that he was a bit of a wasted character. I don't think he should have been the kind of double triple agent you think they were playing about with. He should have just been his sidekick. And
that would have been great.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they wanted us to care more about him doubling or tripling, then we kind of needed more of him.
Yeah. It didn't work. I think that, again, I agree with you, Martin. I think it was very much set up in a lot of ways to be this is going to be the spin off of Adventures of Buck Williams. And had they had different casting or a different character had been written for him, I actually think it could have worked. But I just, whenever I watch the film again, he just winds me up. The Mark Williams character, because I just keep thinking, why have they got a young Fonz in this film? No, do you know what I mean? He just jars with me.
Well, I think they did the math and realized they were in the 50s. So what are you going to do?
Well, you could do a lot of other stuff. You know, there's a lot of other things you could have done. I mean, the thing is,
you're right.
When you watch Temple of Doom, Short Round worked. You know, he was a really good character. The dynamic worked. I always remember feeling like I was gut punched when Indy backhands in Temple of Doom.
Yeah, I know.
And then you have the little sequence where Short Round gives him his hat back and Indy gives him his hat back, and you suddenly, and that's the first time we suddenly realize, oh yeah, he's basically young Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
You know, and you just never ever got that connection with him and Mark. You know, and first time I saw it, I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it. I had no problem with the sci-fi elements. The reason being was they did a spin-off series of comics called The Further Adventures of Indiana Jones that Marvel did. And the first three comics that they did was an adventure with the Nazis and stuff. But it was it was a very similar plot where they were trying to kind of open this interdimensional kind of pool to contact aliens. It was all to do with mystical artifacts and stuff. So I didn't have a problem with that, to be honest. No, a lot of other people did. I didn't have a problem with that. I just thought that the plot was a little bit all over the place. They had some really good actors and actresses in there, but they didn't really know how to use them. The big set pieces were all CGI heavy. And for me, that whole sequence in the forest, the sort of truck chase, their version of the truck chase.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch that, and then you go and watch the truck chase from Raiders, it just pulls apart. Just in terms of the visual effects, and it's just all CGI, and so it's just not real. And then you've got the whole bit of him sword fighting on top of a Jeep, and you know. And again, the first time I saw it, I think I was so swept up in the euphoria of seeing Indy on the screen again that I just came at it from. I was like, I really enjoyed it, and I did. I really enjoyed it. The downside in the world we live in now is the curse of repeat viewings.
Well, yeah. but straddling two vehicles, that's, I don't know, maybe I'm just splitting hairs here, but you know, it's the unbelievable stuff in the first film around that one truck. I for some reason, I just find it a little easier to take on board than straddling two vehicles while sword fighting.
I'm going to ask what you thought about the CGI monkeys.
No, I didn't watch this fourth film in HD, so maybe it was kind to me.
It's just, as I said, it, the best thing about the film was that I came out and I didn't, even on repeat viewings, I don't feel that the character that I grew up with was irreparably damaged. I didn't feel an urge to throw out my
boxer.
And I would never do that. I personally, and that's just, this is just my opinion, you know, it could have been the worst film in the world. It's not going to tarnish my memories. Yeah, those films are those films. Yeah, if anything, it would reinforce those memories because it would make me want to watch those films even more to wash the foul taste out of my mouth. Do
you know palate what? Cleanser.
Yeah, palate cleanser, you know, which is why I tend to regularly watch the episode 4, 5, and 6. But, you know, I would still watch it. Just probably, I would probably watch it more on fast forward. I'd probably watch sequences as opposed to I'm going to sit and watch the entire film.
It's very 2008 and didn't need to be, but it's still an indie film. It's still got lovely locations and a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, yeah, there is some, yeah, there's some good stuff in there. But as I said, I think when you compare it to the other films, I think that's where it starts to break down. And that's for the nuke in the fridge thing. Let me just put this one out there, which is what David said to me. Okay, I get it. He got in the fridge. There's a nuclear explosion. He survived. Oh my God, this is just a travesty or whatever. But in Temple of Doom, he was in a raft. He jumped out of a plane in a raft.
Yeah, that's true. That jarred me today, actually.
In fact, it's not even just him. You know, three of them jumped out of a plane in a raft.
And then you're saying that wouldn't work, Barry?
What I'm saying is, I don't care.
Precisely.
Because anyone who's watched any kind of, because these films were based on the old Cliffhanger Republic serials.
They were.
Which I used to watch because they used to show them on BBC Two when I was a kid. So I kind of remember watching King of the Rocket Men and some of those other ones. And if you think surviving a nuclear explosion in the fridge is extreme, you want to go and watch some of those films. You know, so that's what he's doing. These are you know, and George Lucas and Steven Spielberg said themselves, these are B movies.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're B movies. So this sort of, you know, so they're filled with these ridiculous last minute escapes in these ridiculous situations.
Yeah, no, they're thrill rides. They are.
And that's what I love about it. You know, yeah, any of those sequences, you'd be sort of saying, "Oh, that's ridiculous." You know, if you jump out of a plane in a rock, you're gonna die. You know, you know, all of those films, you really need to have some bloke walking on a suit in the end and go, "Kids, don't try this at home. Indiana Jones is a great professional. If you try this, you will die." You know,
yes.
But that's what we love about those films, you know.
Right. I mean, this isn't the Manchurian Candidate. This isn't the Conversation. You know, they're not trying to advance this. Well, maybe they are trying to advance the cinema form in some ways, but they are really trying to give an experience, aren't they?
Yeah.
When I find myself wanting more of what we've got, mm-hmm. I think to myself, you know what. This is a time period. You know, this is somewhere after a certain technological explosion, but before the modern age,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's there's where there are still tons and tons of frontiers on Earth, although we seem to be able to lose jumbo jets still. But you know, it's like I wouldn't mind as long as they were good characters. I honestly wouldn't care who the characters were as long as I could see tons and tons of films just set in that period.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's what I mean about this idea of rebooting it and going, "Oh, we'd get." No, you don't have to do that. You know, I'm very much new, Pete.
Yeah, I'm happy with Indy's story.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm happy with Harrison Ford's portrayal of Indy's story.
Yeah, but you know, and I don't mind you making the connection. So you're effectively saying this is Indiana Jones' universe. You know, this is his world. And whilst he's doing this, other stuff is going on. So if you want to give me, I'm still harping on about it, but if you want to give me a short round film, I, you know, short round and the whatever the terror, I would kill to go and see that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because Short Round's prime is still inside the era of the indie films.
Yeah, and the good thing is like you say, I think one of the problems that I always saw with the fourth one was going to have was you've got their sweet spot of those films where they're kind of set between 1935 and when was the Last Crusade? Was that 38?
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah. So you've got that sweet spot just before the Second World War when all this sort of stuff is kicking off. And so you've got, you know, you've got the Nazis as the villains. And let's be honest, you know, you can't be a bit of Nazi. You can't be a bit of a Nazi.
No, you can't.
And obviously, you know, you read that.
They had good designers.
Yeah, they had good designers. But you read up on the Nazis and there's this whole kind of, you learn about, you know, Hitler was obsessed with, because he was obsessed with the occult. So you kind of, it's got that kind of little sliver of fact in there as well. And it's the gift that keeps giving, you know. And you then get to the fourth film, which is kind of set in the 50s. And straight off, you've lost all of that. Then, as Pete's saying, more of the modern age is coming in. So there's less of the kind of like Indian horseback type stuff. And, you know, it's more him on the back of a motorbike. Do you know what I mean? And it's just, it feels a little bit too close to the kind of world that I'm used to.
Yeah.
You know? And that's why I think
Lucas and Spielberg kind of knew that stuff was gone. And you know, bringing it back was a win for them.
What would you say was your favorite, if you had to pick only, this is a question I'm asking you, so I don't have to answer it myself. If you had to pick one scene from those four films, which was your scene, your indie moment, what would that be?
Oh, please, you want to go first? Or?
Oh, not fair. Wow. Okay. Hold on. There are the classics out of the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of something big out of the fourth one, but I can't. The leap of faith in the third is good.
That is good.
I'm gonna think of something else after this, but right now I'm just gonna say, you know, it's got to be the classic one. It's the first one we get. It's the frickin' bag of sand.
Yeah, that, yeah.
You know, because he played for and not got.
Something.
You let me go first, so you know.
Yeah.
Now you can't say that.
My favorite bit, it's a quieter moment. It's in the restaurant in Temple of Dune when he realizes he's been poisoned.
Oh, I'm gonna see it.
It's just that slight panic that he's got, and I know it gets a bit comedic when he's chasing the antidote across the floor. But there's just a look Harrison Ford gives.
That
just captures.
That's what I didn't have, is because like, I wanted to say, you know, because that's the Harrison Ford moments where you get a face off of him, and I couldn't think of one, and the bag one really isn't one. But you're right, you're totally right. And I don't even remember the scene you're talking about.
There's also, sorry, Barry.
No, go on, you go on.
There's also a moment in 4 where it's just like his back hurts or something, and it's just like a little wince that he gives in his face. I think, yeah, you know, he is older now. Jumping across something like that is going to hurt. It's just the little moments like that. But obviously, there are the iconic bits that, like Pete mentioned.
Yeah.
And I guess coming down the raft from the plane.
It's awesome, that bit. So are you going to give us one?
Yeah, I think it tends to change really on a daily basis. My love affair with sort of Pulp Adventure started with Raiders, but I think also my love affair with soundtracks. Martin probably already knows this, but I'm a huge, huge soundtrack
fan. Yeah.
And I think it was Raiders where it started. I think sort of Star Wars sort of started me off, but I think it was Raiders where it really kicked in. And obviously we know, you know, the iconic theme and stuff like that. So this sequence, it's not quite a sequence at all, but I just think it was typified Indiana Jones for me as a guy who just doesn't quit, you know. And it was when the Nazis had boarded a submarine and they'd taken Marion, they'd taken the Ark. You couldn't, you know, things couldn't have gone any more to shit than they had done, really. And it's the fact that you didn't have the sort of the captain of Bantu Wind, that's what the ship's called, Captain Katanga. And his sort of first mate comes down. He says, oh, I can't find Mr. Jones, Captain. I've looked everywhere. He says, oh, he's got to be here somewhere. Look again. I found him. Where? There. And he's swum out to the submarine. And that was the second time
yeah, I remember that
everyone cheered.
Yeah, yeah.
And he then climbs up and he does this sort of real kind of half drunk, half lady salute. And then the whole crew salute him back. It's just movie magic. That's the only, it's right up there with when Yoda levitates the X-Wing and when, you know, your first time you see Christopher Reeve fly. It's just a beautiful moment. And the music's going as well. And he's kind of looking around. He doesn't know what to do and whatever. And it's just a brilliant, it's a brilliant scene. I mean, obviously there's many other sort of scenes I could pick, but
that's huge. One,
yeah, that one for me is wicked.
That is a great moment. What surprised me today is how many references Indiana Jones has had in other films. Like there's a bit in Last Crusade where he throws the Nazi off the blimp,
mm-hmm.
and he just says no ticket. And I've watched Dogma by Kevin Smith about a million times, and I only got that today. That when he throws Matt Damon off the train and says no ticket, that's a reference to this.
I was reading up on some of the background for this, and there's another reference mentioned. Apparently, in Captain America: the First Avenger, they talk about Hitler looking for treasures in the desert.
Well done.
Yeah.
Well done, sir. Anything, you may know this one, and I hope I get the title right. If I was to say to you that you could argue that Raiders of the Lost Ark was a reboot, would you know what I was talking about?
No.
There was a film, once we finished recording, see, it's my crush now, but I'm going to have to go and look it up just to make sure it's the right
one. Is this Gunga Din?
No. I mean, obviously, we know that it was, you know, it was inspired by loads of films and blah, blah, blah. But there was a film called Secret of the Incas, which starred Charlton Heston. If you were to talk about, when I saw this, I just happened to be home one day and it was on. And I thought, the hell? He basically looks like Indiana Jones.
Oh, wow.
Now, this came out in 1954. Charlton Heston, I'm just looking, so he plays a sort of, he plays a CD fortune hunter called Harry Steele, who is after the Sunburst, an ancient Inca treasure hidden somewhere in the bowels and ruins of Machu Picchu. And I think there's even a sequence which is very similar to the Well of the Soul sequence.
Gotcha.
And when you see a picture of him, I'm just going to see if I can send it to you. He's got a hat. He's got a fedora, kind of leather jacket.
Oh, yeah, look at that. I just did Heston, Indiana Jones. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Blew my mind. Absolutely blew my mind.
It's all there.
Ooh, somebody needs to call George Lucas.
So, well, they knew what they were doing.
Yeah, I know.
So you could... And it's really funny because when I... came across it, it kind of changed my mind when it came about reboots to a certain degree, because in a lot of ways you could argue that Raiders of the Lost Ark is a kind of loose reboot of this film.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know,
but it's not like if there was a community around Secret of the Incas, that they were not marketed to.
No, you never know.
true. I didn't have my finger on the pulse of 50s pulp fiction fandom when I was 13.
Well, the thing is as well, I mean, you know, if you many of you get into Indiana Jones and you move out into the wider area of pulp and pulp adventure, you realize there's just so many influences that they've drawn on.
Yeah, and on the back of a Star Wars card I used to have, George Lucas said, "The reason I made Star Wars was because I loved all these old serials and I want people to find them."
Yeah.
If you had to rate these films in order of your favorite, which order would you put them in?
We'd always start with Raiders. That's never the problem. I would go Raiders. Then I would probably go Last Crusade. Then I would go Temple of Doom. And then I would go the fourth one.
I need to revisit Temple of Doom before I'm ready to put it next to the first one, or in front or behind it.
I would go Raiders, Last Crusade, Temple of Doom, and then the fourth one.
I need to see Temple of Doom more recently, because I just remember at the time thinking, you know, when he pulls the guy's heart out, I'm like, it just seems so sensational. You know, it's like I just thought they didn't need to do it. because they've done a lot of really horrific stuff, and it just, I don't know why that stood out at the time, but it just really stood out as being totally weird.
It was cut when I saw it.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, when I first saw it, you didn't see, because I've seen it since, and you see him holding the heart in his hand.
Yeah, it's beating.
And it's beating. When I saw it in cinema, you didn't see that. All you saw was him kind of grab the guy's chest, and then the next minute, you know, it bursts into flame, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I'm not surprised because, yeah, I mean, that's all we could talk about when it came out.
Well, did you know that Temple of Doom was directly responsible for America getting the PG-13 rating?
That explains a hell of a lot.
Because of the violence.
Yeah.
Because I think before that, you just had PG, and then it went R-rated or something.
But then, I mean, to a certain extent, you know, it was kind of, even though that was quite graphic, I remember once seeing, first time I saw Raiders, and Splendid, there was a lot of moments in that film where I was wincing. Not just the stuff, but obviously people, let's be honest, yes, okay, he pulled a heart out of someone's chest, but in that first film, some guy got shredded by propeller blades.
Yeah, but it was off screen.
Yeah, it was off screen, but as a kid, at 11, all I saw was blood splatter, which I'd never seen before, and that freaked me the hell out.
Well, I think we've all heard people suggest that it's what you don't see that's worse.
Yeah,
yeah.
But then, you know, you talk about what you do see, then, you know, half an hour later, you see, you know, people's face is melting.
Well, the psychological violence of some of that stuff is probably, in terms of actual violence, way above that heart thing. I think my problem with the heart thing, even now, is just that it feels out of place. But it can't be out of place. They wanted it there. But yeah, I think at the time, because it was groundbreaking, it just really felt out of place. Because I think even in the scary parts, they give you a scare and then they kind of give you something really cool, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas I think that was one of those moments where they were just kind of really reveling in it, I think. You know, it's like, let's watch this heartbeat out of the chest. And it just seemed so gratuitous at the time.
And I remember when they made Indy drink the blood, then he spat in the guy's face, which I thought was grim anyway. And then they beat him with his own whip, and then they forced him to drink it and kind of... And then they locked him in that room and he was all kind of like, you know...
I forgot about that scene, yeah.
Having convulsions and stuff, and then he effectively takes him over. That whole sequence, I was just cringing. Really struggled watching. And then again, obviously, with the when he smacks sort of Shawbride. But I think in the book, actually, I think there's a lot more of it. And he's a lot meaner to Willie in that sequence in the book. And again, I kind of struggled with it when I was reading the book. And you're right, Pete. It was actually, but in a lot of ways, it was a lot darker than Raiders was.
Although, just thinking back about it, it sounds like that's one of the things the other three films don't have so much is, because you talk about it being gritty in the beginning. It's like, I can see how in the second film they might explore the idea of, you know, Indy not always being, you know, Teflon. You know, occasionally he really does get shaken.
Well, it's like that moment where he's kind of where he goes into the tunnels and he sort of sees, you know, what they're doing to the children. I mean, the more I think about it, the more I think, hey, it's quite a grim film. it really is. And now for me, it was also the film that I struggled with the most. I'm not just arachnophobic. I'm pretty much terrified of anything that is, you know, creepy crawly. I can't do it. And even to this day, I can't watch the sequence in the spike room properly.
That is quite horrifying.
It
goes back to the whole thing about we get inundated with so much media about something before we see it. It's so difficult to be kind of presented as fresh to something. You're always going to be fresh to that scene.
Yeah, and I think the thing is as well is that they then brought out, years later, they brought out The Mummy, you know, the Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, oh my God, you must have loved that.
Well, you see, I was able to cope with that better because all the Beatles were CGI.
Really?
And they were blatantly CGI.
Yeah, yeah.
you know, whereas when you watch Temple of Doom, you know they've gone somewhere and they've got a shed load of like God knows what and just dumped it, you know. And fair play to them as well, because I remember them in the making of it, and they were talking to Kate Capshaw, who plays Willie, and like she had to deal with the worst of it because she's the one who's trying to like get to the lever and they were calling over and stuff like that. And I think that's the best death trap sequence in a film in a lot of ways, because you've got the spikes coming down, you know, she's screaming, and it's this bit where you see Indy's face like in this sort of little hole, and he's like, "We are going to die."
Yeah.
Love that.
All acting is reacting.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say that about covers everything we can cover tonight.
Mm-hmm. That was fun.
Yeah, I've had a great time. Barry, why don't you tell people where they can find Geek Syndicate?
You can find Geek Syndicate at www.geeksyndicate.co.uk. I'm there every week, just on Tuesday.
And if people want to check out other pulp adventures, I highly recommend Barry's graphic novel and novel, Fallen Heroes. Where can they find that? On Amazon and the regular places?
Yeah. It's all over. It's all over the place. I'll just say briefly, it's a modern day pulp adventure.
Yeah. But it is very pulp.
It is very pulp. It was. It took me that many years to come up with a story that didn't feel like I was ripping off Indiana Jones. I hope I've done that. But yeah, I'm
new in it.
Yeah. But I had fun. I had fun writing it. So yeah, check it out.
Demons and guns.
You can't beat it. Well, thanks again, guys.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thanks for having me. I'd always happy to talk indie.
Well, we've had Dave on many times, and we thought it was about time we got the real brains behind the operation on.
Yeah, very true.
On that note, good night.